Nuketown Radioactive number 42 for Sunday, December 31st, 2006.
This year has been a little crazy for the Andersons. You may recall we had some trouble last year. The robot council had us banished to an asteroid that hasn't undermined our holiday cheer. And we know it's almost Christmas by the marks we make on the wall. That's our favorite time of year. Merry Christmas from Chiron Beta Prime, where we're working in a mine for our robot overlords. Did I say overlords? I meant protectors. Merry Christmas from Chiron Beta Prime. On every corner there's a giant metal Santa Claus who watches over us with glowing red eyes. They carry weapons and they know if you've been bad or good. Not everybody's good, but everyone tries. And the rocks outside the airlock exude ammonia-scented snow. It's like a winter wonderland. Merry Christmas from Chiron Beta Prime, where we're working in a mine for our robot overlords. Did I say overlords? I meant protectors. Merry Christmas from Chiron Beta Prime. That's all the family news that we're allowed to talk about. We really hope you'll come and visit us soon. I mean, we're literally begging you to visit us and make it quick before they...
Message redacted.
Now it's time for Christmas dinner. I think the robot sent us a pie. You know I love my soil and green. Merry Christmas from Chiron Beta Prime, where we're working in a mine for our robot overlords. Did I say overlords? I meant protectors. Merry Christmas from Chiron Beta Prime.
Welcome to Nuketown Radioactive, the occasional podcast about life, liberty, and the pursuit of geekdom. My name's Ken Newquist, your host, and that was Chiron Beta Prime by Jonathan Colton, which was part of his Thing a Week project. I first heard that song probably about this time last year, and I thought it was awesome, and I wanted to play it during the holiday season this year. And it being December 31st at 12:34 a.m., this is probably the latest in the holiday season that I could get and still be able to get this podcast out. But what can I say, folks? Everybody is snug in their beds, except for me. I've got a little bit of Mountain Dew. I have some time. The baby is sleeping. I'm over my latest bout with a cold. Yes, for those of you keeping track, that's probably two colds within the space of about 6 weeks. This is what happens when your kids go to preschool. Some people call it preschool. I call it an unrelenting plague land. So yeah, things are moving along a little bit slower than I might have expected, but hey, you know, we're still getting in under the deadline. I had a birthday this month. I turned 35 on December 17th, which is one of those kind of quasi-milestone birthdays that let you know that you're halfway to 40, and I think that you can't even really remotely kid yourself that you're part of the youth demographic anymore, as I officially this month had to fill out the 35 to 45 checkbox in a survey, or 35 to 50, you know, that whole time span that just says, yeah, you're not 34 anymore, you've moved on to another block of people. So that's just, I gotta say, it was... It was something of a shock to have to actually check that box, but I knew it was coming, and you know what? 35 turned out to be a pretty good birthday. I spent the day hanging out with my son. We started off with a trip to Barnes & Noble to pick up some new paperbacks with a gift card that I got from my brother-in-law and his wife, and I picked up three books. Learning the World by Ken MacLeod, The Difference Engine by William Gibson and Bruce Sterling, and in a bit of a break from my current sci-fi reading jag, Wizard's First Rule by Terry Goodkind, or Goodkind? I don't know exactly how you pronounce that, but in any case, I don't know exactly how that book's going to fit into my reading schedule right now, because I am on such a big sci-fi kind of kick, but it's something I've been hearing about for a while. I've heard good things about it, and I just figured, hey, you know what, when I get bored, I will pick this up and just kind of launch into the whole fantasy thing again. I've got more thoughts on all of those books up on Duketown, and you'll be able to find a link to the bookshelf where I talk about this in the show notes. I did want to give a happy birthday to Mick Bradley at the Harpy Monkey, who turned 40, and thus bravely breaks trail for us younger geeks to follow. I don't know exactly when his birthday was. I've just been listening to a whole slew of podcasts, and everybody keeps congratulating him on his birthday, so I figured I'd add my voice to that since apparently it's in December, and you know, us December kids have to stick together. Anyway, as far as birthdays go, it was pretty good. Lucas and I went out. We hit Barnes & Noble. I got my books. And then I took this nice, hefty stack of paperbacks to the Cosmic Cup, which is the coffee shop where I hang out at on a fairly frequent basis. At least that's where I get my morning coffee, right? So Luke and I went to the coffee shop, and I got out Learning the World and started to read that, and Luke had his formula and I had my coffee, and there was actually a family who was sitting next to us, and Luke was busy flirting with the I think it was a 15-month-old girl who also happens to have red hair, so they were just making eyes at one another the whole time and just smiling and gurgling and doing pretty much, well, what babies do when they see each other, right? So it turned out to not be quite the relaxing book fest that I was hoping for, but it was still nice to just kind of sit there with Luke and sip some coffee, read a couple pages out of my book, and revel in my 35-ness, right? As far as Christmas goes, we had a good holiday. We went to my parents' house for Christmas Eve and kind of just had a nice low-key Christmas Eve there. And then, wait a minute, I misspeak. That was the plan. Originally, we were supposed to go to my parents' house, but it turns out they came here. I forgot about that. My mom hurt her knee or something like that. She runs her dogs in agility classes, and which agility is this whole other world. If you don't know about it, I'm not going to get into it now. But suffice it to say, my mom kind of overdid it and ended up coming to our house for Christmas Eve, which was fun, you know. It was great to be opening presents, and Jordan loved it all, and Luke is a little bit young, since he's about 6 months right now. He's a little young to get into the whole wrapping paper thing, but he loves tissue paper, and loves just kind of balling it up, and like rubbing his face in it, and just having a good old time with that. So, that was a good holiday, and I got my, from my parents, I got my brand spanking new iPod. It's a 30 gig iPod, black, video capable, and it is a beautiful thing. And it's a beautiful thing because for one thing, it's got a huge amount of capacity. For another, unlike my current iPod or my previous iPod, it still works. It actually works. My old iPod, which is about 4 years old, had decided to stop syncing with the Mac, which was kind of problematic. You know, it would still charge, and maybe once every 20 or 30 times, it would actually update all of the podcasts and such. But for the most part, it wouldn't really do its job. So this one gets me all caught up. And it's great because I've been kind of away from podcasts for the last month or so because I didn't have any way of listening to them. You know, I had a couple that my iPod managed to update, but, you know, it was just kind of a haphazard kind of thing. Now I've got this pretty new iPod. I can take it to the gym with me. I didn't get, like, any of the cool accessories, so I just keep it in my pocket while I'm there. But it's great, you know, it's got a good audio connection, so unlike my old one, it doesn't break up as I'm walking along. And all in all, I'm really happy with it. As Sue said, I was just kind of like giddy all Christmas Eve day because I knew this was going to be in my stocking. So that made me a very happy geek. I also picked up a new game for my Xbox, which would be Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion, which was pretty cool. I got some money from my in-laws, and which totally blew me away because they got me also like this really cool little, it's not so little, it's a It's like a kit for storing your windows for a soft top Wrangler, so that instead of just kind of throwing them in the back, you can put them into this kind of Wrangler sock, and the windows don't get scratched up and all. So that was really cool. But then they also gave me some money for Christmas, and with that, I was able to go out and get Elder Scrolls, which, you know, I'd been kind of missing the role playing time sink, otherwise known as the World of Warcraft. So I decided to get this, which is the next best thing. It's a huge, expansive game. I'm kind of just been taking the tact that I would just kind of wander around. I would do my normal kind of wizard fighter thing and just kind of explore the world. And so far, it's been fun. I mean, it's big enough that you really can get lost and it really can be intimidating. But the other nice thing about it is that it gives you waypoints for the story. So if you want at any given time, you can just kind of pick up the story and go along. You don't have to explore and get lost and stumble upon vampires in the middle of the woods. So the thing that brings that back into the iPod is that it turns out, and I had known this, but I hadn't actually been able to try it because my iPod is so old that it only has a FireWire cable. The Xbox 360 supports the iPod. So basically, if you can you can hook up your USB capable iPod to the 360, and it will read the playlists that are on your iPod, and it will play any of the unencrypted ACK files that are on there, which is pretty cool because now I've got all these podcasts. I've got this huge time-consuming role-playing game to play, and now I can, you know, listen to All Games Considered or, you know, Geek Label or whatever while I'm playing Oblivion at 1 o'clock in the morning, waiting for Luke to go to sleep. So it all just comes together for the geek dad, right? Last thing I got was Halo 2 Volume 2 soundtrack, which is pretty much the soundtrack that Halo fans wanted when the sequel was released, and now it's finally out. I got a copy via iTunes, thanks to the iTunes gift certificate that I got from my sister. And so far, I've only listened to like the first two tracks, but it's totally what I was looking for from the soundtrack. Those of you who don't know, the original Halo 2 soundtrack was, they took some of the music from the game, but then they also had like stuff by Breaking Benjamin and just a whole bunch of different modern rock bands. And I mean, it was okay. It's grown on me over the years, but you know, it wasn't what I wanted. I wanted this. I wanted the actual game music, and now I have it. So I look forward to listening to that at work next week.
Hello? If you're like me and you can't find nothing good to watch on TV while doing your menial house chores, why don't you do what I do? Listen to Dwayne Harrelson and Villain Talk. You can find his website at home.comcast.net/tildevillaintalk. Villain Talk is all one word. Now I better get back to tenderizing tonight's dinner.
So that is Villain Talk. It looks to be a really fun podcast for evil masterminds and their minions. As you can tell, it's done pretty much tongue-in-cheek, and it really sounds like a lot of fun. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but it is queued up on my iPod, and the next time, the next time I'm hacking and slashing my way through Oblivion, hopefully it will show up on my playlist. Next thing I wanted to talk about, which is unfortunately a little bit late in the season for this, since most of you will probably be hearing about it after New Year's, but listener John sent it in, so I wanted to mention it. It is a gingerbread TIE fighter. That's right, it is Lord Darth Vader's TIE fighter from A New Hope, rendered in gingerbread. So, it's pretty cool. You can check it out on Flickr. There'll be a link to it in the show notes. There's a huge photo set that's got something like 20-something photos, and it looks pretty cool. For those of you who know me and know Nuketown, I've got this thing called the Geek Tree, which has all kinds of like Star Wars, Star Trek, all that kind of ornaments on it. And this would be just the perfect accompaniment to it. I don't think that I am crafty enough to create something like this, but it's nice to know that folks in Germany are. Now, the last site I want to talk about is She's Such a Geek, which is a collaborative blog written by a number of geeky women, who in turn published a book of the same name. Recent posts have talked about Doctor Who, Gifts for Girls, and Women in Academia, and it looks to be a fun blog. I just added it to my queue, or not to my queue, to my RSS feed reader, and I look forward to keeping up with it. I stumbled across it, I think, through maybe one of Wired's various blogs, if I remember correctly. But, you know, I'm always thinking about possible geeky role models for Geordi. So, you know, this looks to be a good blog with that regard. You can check it out at www.shesuchageek.com. And, of course, the link will be in the show notes.
You must be listening to the Goblin Broadcast Network at gbn.com. Amazing!
I've managed to do a fair amount of reading over the last couple of weeks, and one of the most recent books that I have, well, pretty much torn through, was A Fire Upon the Deep by Werner Vonge, which was published by Tor in 1992. It's got 624 pages, and in it, the galaxy is far stranger than we know. It's divided into zones of thought with different physical rules applying to different zones. In Earth's region of the galaxy, otherwise known as the slowness, faster-than-light travel is impossible. In the beyond, which lies above it, in this case lying further out from the galactic core, various levels of high technology are possible, including increasingly exotic and powerful forms of FTL traffic. At the highest reaches of the galaxy, at the very outskirts of it, lies the Transcend and the godlike powers that inhabit it. As the story opens, a group of humans in what's known as the Stromuli realm? Yeah, that sounds about right. Stromuli? Whatever. Anyway, this group of humans in this realm stumble across a long-lost archive in the high beyond. Too late, they discover that it is a trap so powerful that it almost instantly subsumes their civilization. A handful of humans, with a cargo of children in cryosleep, flees the spreading disaster, falling all the way to the very edge of the slowness. Meanwhile, the thing they've unleashed reveals itself to be a new power, and one capable of not only murdering some of its godlike peers, but also subjugating the entire beyond, which is something that's been hitherto unheard of. A handful of humans aboard the ship Out of Bound 2 realize the danger, including one Pham Nguyen, who is formerly an avatar of one of these powers, and now a man on a mission to find the elusive countermeasure that lurks at the bottom of the beyond that just might be able to stop this new power's expansion. Nguyen and his crew race to the bottom, following the earlier survivors of the disaster at the Stromali realm. They soon discover that the adults on board the fleeing ship were killed in its crash on an alien world. Now, the surviving human children have made contact with the natives of this planet, a pack-like group mind canines, which come to be known as the Tynes. As Nguyen and his shape race his ship... Yeah, it's now 1 a.m, so, you know, things just keep stumbling forward. But anyway, Nguyen and his ship race to the Tynes' homeworld in an attempt to unleash the countermeasure and rescue the kids that are there. They learned that the Tynes have a medieval society and that is preparing for war, and that only the Out of Bound and its advanced technology can save them from the brutal enemy approaching to destroy them and steal the crashed starship. Now, as I've been talking about for a while here, I've been on a big space opera kick, as, you know, is evidenced by my review of Pandora's Star in Radioactive number 40. And really, it's been paying off. A Fire Upon the Deep is a fast, compelling read packed with all manner of high technology and a cosmological setup that I haven't seen before. The whole zones of thought thing nicely solves the problem of galactic speed limits, allowing faster-than-light travel to live alongside Earth's slowness. Moreover, the transfer of technology from Transcend to Beyond to Slowness makes for some great stories, such as what happens to the middle beyond worlds when the gods that granted them their technology decide to turn things off. Vinge does a great job of world-building. Even his tangential civilizations like that, known as the Nizora, really feel real. I mean, in this case, the Nizora, one of the main characters on board the Out of Bound, is from this realm. We never actually go to it, but she alludes to it in many different times about the Age of Princesses, which my daughter would love, right? And although we're never actually there, it's, you know, we're able to mourn it at some point in the book. I don't want to give away too many spoilers, but suffice it to say that, you know, Vinge is able to create this detailed universe, and even though we're only just passing through it, it's still, you know, you still want to be, you're only passing through these sections, but they're interesting, and you almost want to say, no, stop, go back, I want to look at that, but there's not enough time because you're still racing along, and the whole fate of the galaxy is resting on the shoulders of our heroes. The Flight of the Out of Bound is reminiscent of a similar flight in David Brin's earlier Star Tide Rising, at least Well, yeah, there are a fair amount of parallels to Star Tide Rising, in which a group of humans and dolphins come across an ancient galactic secret and are forced to flee any number of xenophobic aliens, and then crash on a world where they desperately try and make repairs. And, well, you know, I'll have to... I need to reread that book and review it because... Man, that was a good read. But anyway, if you liked Star Tide Rising, or if you liked David Brin's work, I think you'd like this book. The crowning achievement, though, is the alien culture of the times. Now, normally the whole group minds thing makes me cringe, but Tynes are different. Individually, each Tyne is like a wolf-like creature. It has basic understanding of its nature, but it's very limited. It's kind of like a smart dog. But here's the thing. When these individual smart animals come together to form a pack, they form this group mind, and the identity goes from kind of like this loosely defined we of the general pack to a firmly defined I. It's an actual personality. It's a individual. And each pack has its own unique sense of self that can be expanded or distorted by adding or removing members, which is amazing. I mean, imagine if you're just sitting there and you're kind of analyzing yourself, and there's things you don't like about yourself. You know, maybe you stumble over your words, or, you know, you're just not outgoing enough, or, you know, you've got a mean streak to you. Well, imagine if you could actually operate on yourself by adding and removing components. You find some other person who's compatible, and now they join the pack, and your capabilities change a little bit. Your personality changes a little bit. So that was pretty cool. Now, this whole pack mind thing raises fascinating questions about whether, you know, you would rework your mind if it meant that you would give up part of who you are. And it also gives rise to a different kind of totalitarian who ruthlessly flenses packs, killing, torturing, and otherwise experimenting with their makeup to create ever more useful individuals. The interactions between the Tynes and the human children who survived the initial starship crash is just an excellent read, and when Vinge takes us on to the, lets us take on the perspective of the Tynes, we get to see through the eyes of a society that, as it turns, alien and familiar. I mean, it's just really great stuff. I mean, if you like, you know, the whole fantasy thing, and the feudalistic time period, well, here's the opportunity to look at a feudalistic society, but one that is radically different from what we knew on Earth, because you've got these pack animals running around, you know? It is just a really cool read, and I think he does a good job, through the kids being stranded on this planet, of allowing us to see both the creature's alienness, because we're looking at it from the human perspective, but then also their... allowing us to establish allowing us to become familiar with them by seeing things through their eyes and being able to understand the limitations of their society and their fascination with the idea of a mind that is self-contained to a particular individual. So, all in all, this was a really good read. There's actually another book, which I hope to review in an upcoming episode, called A Deepness in a Sky, which is a prequel to this, which takes place 40,000 years beforehand, and may be, in many ways, a better book, especially for people who like the hard science fiction angle. But if you're in the mood for a really good space opera, and you just want to be able to take a book and, you know, maybe read it on a nice long weekend, I definitely recommend picking up this one.
Back in the midst of time, before D20, before Doom, before Settlers of Catan, there were other games. Role-playing games like Top Secret and Traveler, video games like Dark Castle and Mule, and board games like Titan, Cosmic Encounter, and Diplomacy. At the Vintage Gamer podcast, we remember those times. In fact, we seek out great games from an earlier era. Each episode, we go back and take a fresh look at an older game that has stood the test of time, to see what works, see what doesn't, and spend a little time reminiscing. So grab your bottle of 30-year-old scotch or a piece of fine Stilton and join us at The Vintage Gamer, available at www.thevintagegamer.net.
That'll about do it for this podcast and for 2006. As always, comments are welcome. You can send them to me at nuketown@gmail.com. That's it for now. I will talk to you again in 2007.